yeah, my work means something, but the depth was never there. And now going forward with the shores, for the first time, I feel like, there we go. That's who I am as an artist.
Hello and welcome to the Now Then podcast. In this conversation, we speak to Leon Ward. We discuss her path into the industry, establishing herself as a director, and her process of making short films. This episode is sponsored by Smoke and Mirrors. Hope you enjoy. Now then, Leon. Leon Ward.
What's the crack?
Nice to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
How are you getting on?
How are you getting on, yeah.
I'm all right.
Yeah.
I'm all right.
We saw you walking past outside in the rain.
You did.
Lost.
Lost.
Like a lost dog.
Lost like a little dog, a little drowned rat.
We came outside and brought you in.
Got me a coffee.
Got you a coffee. Well.
To warm you up.
Least we can do, isn't it?
Let's go straight into it. So you're originally from Ireland.
Yes, I'm from Dublin.
To me, looking through your work, it feels like there's a really strong connection with your work there as well. What were you like growing up in Ireland?
It's just amazing. I've been in London 14 years now. Accent obviously hasn't really gone anywhere. Hopefully it doesn't.
Which is good. I feel like mine's buggered off.
There's no way yours has.
Yeah. I feel like mine's buggered off. Yeah, mine's gone walking around as well.
it was amazing. Grew up by the sea my whole life. Could see the sea from my classroom, my bedroom, everywhere. And it was just a very normal upbringing. I feel like Irish people were very, I can't believe I'm not even a minute into this and I'm already talking about Ireland.
That's great.
Growing up in Ireland was beautiful. I went to an all-girls Catholic school my whole life. And it really shapes you as a person. You have to kind of fend for yourself. But then you also have this kind of society back home where everyone, we're just very chatty, very, very friendly. I think that was the one thing I noticed when I moved over here. My dad sat me down with all my uncles when I first moved here in the pub. And they said, Leon, they're not as friendly as us. So don't be too friendly because they'll take the piss out of you. And that's so true. I still can't believe they don't say hi or thank you to the bus driver. It's beyond me. I just had a very normal upbringing. My mom was a house cleaner and a hotel cleaner. My dad worked at sea his whole life. My older sister, she didn't really have a normal upbringing. She danced in river dance. You know, I think that was a big thing, was because my sister was in professional feshes every weekend. We had trad music playing in the house all the time. My mum had it blaring. You know, if it wasn't the Cranberries, it was reels and slip jigs and just traditional Irish music. And that was very, very normal. And then I guess pair that with a very patriotic father who drilled into me at a very young age to be proud to be Irish. It's just my whole being. It's really, really important to me as my identity and everything I want to say and the stories I want to tell. And that's probably why it was just ingrained in me from a very young age. And I feel like coming over here, it did really hit me like a ton of bricks that, we're really special. We're really, we have a lot to be proud of. And our culture is just everything. It's in our blood. And we are natural storytellers.
Where did photography and directing or being a kind of artist come from that? Did you study it in Ireland?
No. So at school, I was dyslexic, obviously, like most creatives, but was severely dyslexic and adored English, adored poetry. But music was my one thing. I adored music growing up. I was obsessed with it. And when I was like 15, I, you know, would just listen to like Mozart piano concertos on loop. I think it was like the one thing I knew that I was good at, or I had a knack at. So when it was time to do the leaving cert. So in Ireland, it's, you don't have a UCAS form or anything. You just have to, you get point system. And if you make the points for the course, you get it. If you don't, you get the course that's under that. And at the time, I just did an arts degree in classical music and French. And I lasted a year at that. But on the side, I had started taking photos myself. So I actually started collaging before taking photos. So when I was growing up, when it was time to do christening cards or Christmas cards, birthday cards, my mom used to keep a big, massive box of cards. And when it was time for someone's birthday, she'd throw the box down and I'd sit in front of the TV and she'd say, right, make a card for Aunt Granny, you know, a card for Dolores. And I used to sit with the scissors and collage the card with Pritstick, and she used to bring me loads of gel pens, everything. So I used to, yeah, collaging was, I adored it. And like, I think that was the first moment. I mean, yeah, it was 15. That was the first moment I realized how much I was getting from creativity. But at the time, I mean, I'd no idea really what I was doing. So when I decided to leave university and become a photographer, it was just a joke. Like I knew what my dad was going to say. My dad had, like, you know, a rule book as like a single father to be like, if you do your job, she just needs to go to university and you've done your job right. And I did not do that.
Because she dropped out.
Yeah, I had to tell him that. He came home and he said, how was your first day of second year, love? I was like, I didn't go. I'm actually moving to London to become a photographer. And he was like, you're fucking joking me. So I just did it. I just started shooting like crazy. And at that point as well, I'd already started collaging old photos of my mother. And was using, you know, obviously just these 35 mil photos to collage, and I got a scanner. And when I ran out of photos, I had to take my own photos. So I used to go to Oxfam and get just beaten up, you know, 35 mil cameras worth like a pound at the time. And was just became obsessed with taking photos, became obsessed for queuing up to get my £1 roll of film, and just made a whole lot of mistakes. But that's kind of what formed my work, I feel.
How did you get the confidence from being like taking photographs in Ireland and Dublin to then go, you know what, I'm going to move to London and try and make this a thing there? Like, what was the catalyst of that?
It's a big jump.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I've always been like this growing up. I've always been super passionate about, well, everything. I guess I'm a very passionate person, and I just knew I was always the odd one out. In school, I liked different music to everyone. I was always the odd one out, but I loved being the odd one out. I kind of embraced it. So the idea of kind of shocking people, I kind of got a kick from. And I knew that no one around me, I knew everyone thought I was mad just going to London, like packing a bag and going to London. So I kind of got a kick from it, and I was like, right, I need to prove this to my dad. So I just came over and just started grafting from the second my feet hit the soil. Like, yeah.
That's great, though. I think when you've got something to prove also, I think it's a really good incentive, isn't it? Like, I think it's kind of time. Always good to have something to prove. I think whenever I don't have something to prove, I always find myself just kind of stuck in the mud a little bit.
Well, especially like coming from a small town. And you're going, right, I'm going to do this. Like, I don't know what it is with me sometimes. The idea of like, because my mum is always like, come back home. Move, come back to Pontefract, our little town. And there's something about it that makes me feel like, I'm not moving back. Because I feel like I've like failed.
No, mate, I'm very tempted sometimes, Ozzy.
Yeah,
no. Easy life calls.
Yeah, but there is this part where you're just like, nah, I want to stay and prove that I can make it in the big city.
Yeah, and I think maybe it was watching my sister on Riverdance. Like, that was madness. Like, that wasn't normal for my family. Like, we came from, you know, a rough area. Like, and, you know, here's my sister, like, traveling the world with Riverdance. So I think watching that as a little girl and my sister, you know, in Radio City in New York, I think that was in me from a very young age. Like, oh, I can actually do anything I want. So, yeah, I don't know. I just came over and I was just raring to go. And I just got shooting. The second I got over here, I started assisting. I assisted one photographer and I essentially did his laundry and sorted his letters. And when the bank would call him, he'd make me answer. So it made him look more professional, which now I look back and I'm like, that's quite clever.
I'm doing the same. So.
Yeah. But I mean, I didn't learn anything from that. I was very much just like dying to get out and started street casting myself and would just go up to random people who I thought had an interesting face and take their photo. And I just did that consistently and then teamed up with a friend of mine, Lucy. And Lucy was assisting for Julian Gagneau at the time and she was styling. So I was 20 at this point. I was like, okay, if you get the clothes and I have the rolls of film, let's just do editorials. So we spent our whole weekends just essentially finding models, putting them in literally like a Balenciaga jacket that was not ours, shoot it. And then I would edit it all, obviously. And we sent it out to magazines and it went to like ID and Days.
But you just like cold email, just like, hey, I've just done these things.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Great.
Until you got a snag.
Yeah.
Wow. Amazing. That's wicked.
And so how then, where were the kind of, how then did you get into filmmaking?
So my plan was to always go into Move and Image from photography. I never wanted to rush it. I wanted to make, there was numerous occasions where I was offered to do the moving image element with the photography campaign, but I just said no because I was like, I know for a fact that once my name goes on this, that's my language of directing and I'm not there yet. And I was like 23 at the time. So after like a breakup when I was like, I honestly can't even remember what age I was, 24 maybe, I went to LA and I lived in LA for a bit. And that was the first time ever I wanted things to move and not to be still. It was everything about LA. It was the smell of it, the way the palm trees moved. I was obsessed. So I got myself a little camcorder and I started shooting everything. And then a friend of mine, Alex, Reggie Snow, he was out there at the same time. And I begged him to let me do a music video for him. And he's like, you're a photographer. I'm like, no, I'm making films now. I've got a little camcorder. And it was literally the size of my hand and it was baby pink. And I just taught myself how to, you know, obviously use it. And I was obsessed with films growing up. And I kind of already knew what I wanted things to look like. And framing was really important to me from the get-go. So I made a little music video for him out there. And then when I came back from LA, every stills job I had, I'd bring my camcorder with me and I made a film to go with every stills job. So I was kind of subconsciously making a reel for myself and obviously taught myself how to edit on Premiere Pro, graded. I used to take credits from like, you know, The Wind That Shakes the Barley and put it into Photoshop and like do my name with it. And just made and songs, you know, I didn't have a clue about copywriting or anything. And I would just send it to the client after saying, by the way, I also made this film. And nearly every single time they wanted to use it. So I did like 5 of those films. And then at Black Dog, Martin, my EP that was there, he calls me up one day and he says, there's a director's brief for you. And I was like, wait for me? And he's like, well, yeah, you're making films now. I was like, what, does this mean I'm a director? And he was like, yeah. I was like, all right, send it over. Like, I didn't even know what it, you know, what it was. And he was like, right, you've got 3 days to make a treatment. And I was like, what's a treatment? And then I remember my stills rep at the time was like, you're going to have to just guide her through this. And I was like, no, it's fine. And he sent me a load of, you know, examples. So the first ever treatment I did was I wrote my, it was for Stella McCartney pop fragrance.
Is that your first proper directing?
Yeah.
Whoa, I remember seeing that.
Yeah, that was my first. And I got my notebook out and I handwrote my idea. And I had my silly little drawings.
I think I've seen them.
Yeah.
They're great.
I scanned it in and I sent it. And I was like, there's my treatment. And Martin was like, we can't send this. Like, this isn't a treatment. And I was like, just please send it. Like, I think they'll understand. And we won the job. Like, and that was my first ever time directing. And it was, we'll never forget that feeling of just like being on set and not holding the camera was the scariest feeling ever. I remember just being like, I'm not in control here. And my good friend, Jason Wallace, the grader ETC, he was going out with my friend at the time. And he was just, you know, like, what you need is a cinematographer that you're going to trust. That is number one for you to transition into moving image, because you're so particular with your stills. You need to have someone that you trust holding that camera. And that was Deepa Keshavaya.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it was just the best day of my life.
And you shot on film.
Yeah.
Which was like, I can't even, please, my ignorance first coming into it, I didn't even know there was like, that was an option, you know. It was just like, oh yeah, there's an Alexa that would what I'd shoot on. I didn't even think about shooting on film. But it really stands out is the Stella McCartney pop video, like the edit, favorite. The rhythm of it, the music. As in, like, I could still watch that now, saying that's the first piece of your work, and be like, that language has carried on, like, throughout your work for me, like fun. It's like, but the edit's really solid and the movement's really solid. It feels really, really thought out, you know, rather than sometimes a lot of fashion films can be very loose.
Well, yeah, my plan was to never go into fashion film. And that was another thing, was obviously being a stills photographer predominantly in fashion. I made it very clear. I am not becoming a director to do fashion films. I want to tell stories. So trying to navigate that, trying to establish myself as a director but not pigeonholing myself into fashion, I just made sure that everything I touched never came with a fashion head. I wanted my voice to come across, which I think I, you know, I guess.
Definitely does.
Yeah. Well, I love that.
I can't believe that was your first. Because it was wicked.
All shot on a wheelchair in a Baptist church.
Yeah, the location's wicked.
Me running around Deepa with a wheelchair. Me doing the choreography behind.
But the models are great as well. I feel like they're getting the rhythm of it. So you didn't have a choreographer for that?
No, but I mean, that's how I do all of my work even to this day, is I want everything to be as natural and free as possible. You know, like whether it's like a Javon Chiad or, you know, anything, like it has to be. I hate when things are too contrived, and it's kind of what I struggle with shooting in the States, is, you know, especially when you're shooting a celeb in the States, and their whole thing is they want it to feel natural and free, and then you have an AD screaming like a militant sergeant and everyone's like quivering in their boots that they're about to walk in. I think that's another part of being maybe Irish that helps, is like, that will never faze me, never, you know, just treat them like human beings, because they're not fucking God's gift, they're just normal people. And that's what I always try to bring to set, because when you bring that to set, I feel like it comes through in the work. You can just tell straight away if someone's actually enjoying themselves or if someone isn't enjoying themselves.
Big time. Because I even could see it through Because one of my other favourite pieces of work you did is the Zara Kids one.
Actually. Yeah, I love that one.
And it's so fun. I loved that so much. It's so fun. Because well, that location's wicked. Yeah. I shot in the swimming pool next to it. Oh, nice. And I was like, someone said, oh, there's a really good sports hall next to it. And yeah. I went through and I was like, I recognise that.
Yeah.
Because it's like all beautifully blue and it's got that really nice wooden floor. But even that has this, it, for me, it had a similar tone to seeing the Stella McCartney pop, which is like this freeing, like loose choreography, but then great music as well.
Mm. Music's really important.
Yeah.
I
think it's
never
hard sometimes to choose.
It is.
But do you work with a composer or do you?
Yeah, I work with a guy called Matt who's done nearly every single piece of mine. And I always know what music I'm using before going in. Like music, I feel like sometimes is a second thought to directors, but to me it's like it can make or break a piece.
Well, what about if it's like, so do you, because I always do this thing usually when I write a treatment, I make a playlist at the start of the treatment and be like, listen to this playlist while you read to get you in the mood or whatever. Yeah, which is a lot of fun. But then it gets them in the like right headspace. But when you're, so if you say you know the music, do you send references to your composer and then they make something before you're going into it?
I'd call him.
Yeah.
I'm a bit of a waffler. So instead of me writing an email, I'd just send like a 5-minute voice note, essentially humming.
I feel like things. I'm same actually.
Like the Bottega Veneta job I did, that was like pennies. And the second it came in, I immediately knew what song. And I could not for the life of me. I think I voice noted probably 8 of my friends being like, what is that song where it's like, I don't eat, I don't sleep. I was like, what is that song? And someone got it at the end of the day. But I knew.
Drives, right. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
God, you shouldn't text me. I'll tell you. But anyway, I think it's such a funny, tough language to kind of like talk about composing and like conveying your thoughts to him, you know, composer. I always find that quite tricky because, you know, especially when I sit next to mine, I'm always like, well, can we try this? And he'll go to me, well, it's not musically correct. We can try it. And I'm just like, well, we'll try it. And, you know, you got to kind of find these different words that describe different sounds, like sharp, spiky, kind of depth, you know, all these kind of, I find it, I mean, it's just a different language altogether. How do you talk to your composer?
I always start with soul. Like some kind of soul or disco is where I go straight to because that's what I love. And it has a good feeling and upbeat, you know, I nearly said vibe there. Upbeat sound to us. I'd go from there. And then if I want something a bit more up-tempo, I would go up a notch. And then I'd go more electronic. But how we would usually work is he knows what I like already, so he'd send back 20 tracks and I'd play, you know, a clip of something that I feel like it's what it's going to look like, and I would just go through each one of them and you just impulsively know which one it is. Or if there's one, love this, do we have anything a little bit slower than this? And then that's definitely it.
No.
But yeah, I love playing with music though. It's like, it's really fun.
And it can make or break things sometimes for some people. Yeah.
You can it, definitely. I was also going to say, as a female director, how have you found it coming through the industry?
I mean, with a name like Leon, it's really fun.
To be honest, when we were coming here, the producer who does this, our friend Jack at Smoke and Mirrors, was like, yeah, let us know when your lad comes. And we were like, it's a female. She's a woman.
I don't know. It's never really been a thing for me, to be honest. I've always, yet again, it's another reason for me to prove myself. There's been numerous times where I've been in a meeting room and they're sitting waiting for Leon to arrive. And I'll leave it like 20 minutes. I'll just sit there. And then I'll be like, should we start then? Like, oh, we're waiting for Leon. I'm like, I'm here. That's happened in like so many times.
Yeah, but
I think the only experience I had was I was doing this shoot out in Calgary for the Olympics, and I must have been 27, 28 at the time. And that was honestly the only time I sensed a kind, you know, small town in Calgary. And my gaffer was just in shock that I was directing, but in quite a nasty way. I could tell he was talking about me. I could tell he doubted every bone in my body. And he was just not very happy. And I heard him, you know, snigger a couple of times. And I just was like, okay, let's go. Like, you know, and then even through the recce, you know, I was asking him where to, you know, let's do this. Can we like get a bit more bounce here? Let's get a bit more natural light. Should we open these? And you could tell he was trying to, you know, he was trying to get a rise out of me. Well, I was absolutely trying to get a rise out of him as well. And I was kind of acting dumb. So, and then the shoot went really well. And he came up to me at the end of the day and he shook my hand and I remember he goes, well done, little lady. Like, you did really well today. And I was like, yeah, you did really well too. Yeah. See you later.
Well, you know, I also like, it feels a funny question to ask that actually. And I'm just thinking, obviously we had it written on our notes and actually asking it, it's like, well, what's the point of that question? But the point is, I think for a lot of female directors, it's been quite a struggle, you know. I think over the past 10 years, a lot of people we talk to as well, Ozzy, you know, weirdly enough, it's not a question that I don't feel is, I don't know. So I think it was just from our point of view as well, knowing that you've been doing it so long, we were kind of intrigued really, Base.
Well, just hoping if it's changing dynamics.
Yeah, if you've seen a change, I guess.
But I guess it's coming. How old was this gaffer? Was it an old geezer?
Older guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, older guy. I have to say, I've never had any bad experiences. Like, I've just always been kind of met with, you know, respect and grace. And but I think, you know, it's important for, you know, especially I do a little bit of lecturing on the side, and I'm doing the moving image part of LCF, and there's so many, you know, 18 to 20 year old girls in there that want to become directors, and that's everything to me, you know, to sit and like show them my work and be like, you can do this. It's not how it used to be. Like, this is a very realistic job for you. And to really just sit them down and be like, look, this was not a realistic, like, on paper, I shouldn't be here, but I am. And we're doing it. And once you know what you want to make, you just get your head down and just make it. Just go out and shoot. Don't take no as an answer from anyone.
Great. We want to talk about your short films as well.
Yeah.
So interesting. Your first short you released, I think, when did I see it? Maybe last year, year before, maybe?
2 years.
2 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's on your dad.
Yeah, Wooden Wheel.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah, lovely film.
Where did that come from?
A friend of mine, Joe Bird, was putting on a screening at the Prince Charles Cinema. And he really wanted me to, he knew I'd already started writing Woodlice. And I said, there's no way I'm rushing it, you know, that's being parked for now. But I thought, how can I be strategic with this and almost do a test run for Woodlice? Because I'd never made a short film before. So I essentially used Wooden Wheel as a bit of a test run for my main short that's premiering soon. And I can't lie, it was, you know, I did the shot list for that in like on the flight over, because I said to myself, what story can I realistically tell that I feel passionate about and I love and I cherish, and that is my father. I didn't even need to do a shot list for this. The man is just, it, you know, he's a living legend that I knew once I put a camera in front of him, he would just do amazing. But yeah, it was important for me as well. He was having some health issues at the time. So half of it, honestly, was like obviously a creative exercise to make something that wasn't a music video or a TVC. The other half was, I just want to have this footage of my dad. I want to do this with him. And it was a really beautiful couple of days spending it with him. And even more importantly, that's the first time he's ever seen me work. So to watch him, you know, me, my DOP and my dad lugging the boxes down by the sea and asking questions about the camera and, oh, so what, you load that in there? And then where does the film go? And where's the light coming in? And it was so precious. It was really, really special to just have that day for him to witness me directing, I guess, in such a natural way. So, yeah.
Did you treat him like he was the client? Did you give him like first view of the edit?
Yeah, I did.
But how was that?
Yeah, it was amazing. It's like, geez, me belly. That's all he kept saying was, I need to lose weight. Me belly's awful. But yeah, that was great. And then again, with music, I knew I wanted to feel poetic and with my dad's voice. And that was really difficult to do to record the voiceover with my dad. He doesn't really open up about his trauma or PTSD and to this day, really. So that was quite an interesting exercise to even, you know, get those words out that I managed to.
What was the process in that? Like, did you do that before or after you shot?
After.
After.
Yeah, I did that after because I wanted him to kind of, I didn't want to pressure him. So I wanted to do the shoot days first and then just to relax and then to tell him the premise and what I wanted to discuss with him. But I mean, I'm talking like, you know, 25 to 30 years of just not talking about this. It was difficult.
Let's tell people what it is he's talking about, actually. Just for people who don't know, really.
It's so it's a film about my father's relationship with the sea. So my dad swims twice a day, every day, all year round. There's probably 2 days of the year that he doesn't swim. But at the same time, he had a really bad traumatic accident when, God, maybe 25 years ago, where he lost half his leg and his leg got caught in an anchor. And it was awful. He was still in all of his work clothes and he was underwater for like 45 seconds. And he has severe PTSD from it. And yeah, as I said, he never really talks about it. So I wanted to make something for him to be able to be proud of himself. But also to show him that you can talk about these things and it's healthy to talk about these things. And then just the relationship between how the sea, I just find it so interesting. I don't think my dad would know what to do with himself if he couldn't swim. It's his complete therapy, you know. That's his only therapy. And it clears his head like that, but also it's where the most tragic thing happened to him exists as well.
You know, it's... Oh, go on, Rosie. I was going to say, how did you do the interview with him? Did you just like put a radio mic on him and chat, or what was the environment?
Just did it in the sitting room.
Yeah.
Just sat with him in the sitting room, and I just wanted him as comfortable as possible because I could feel he was a bit on edge.
Yeah.
So I knew it just had to be me and him.
Yeah.
It's interesting, actually, because we were actually talking about this before you arrived here. Because obviously, you've chosen, I guess, your family as a subject within your films, and you really feel that, you know, it's definitely got, you know, it pulls you emotionally. Lockdown, I did something on my mum. It's still my favourite piece of work. And you feel it. You definitely, you know... You understand her as a character, and I hope it, you know, also draws you emotionally. Ozzy also did a film on his brother.
A brother, yeah.
And it's beautiful. Yeah. It's interesting. We were actually saying, like, you know, people looking for projects to do. I guess from our experience, a bit of advice would be to do something on something that's close to you.
Yeah, big time. Because I remember it took me ages to kind of then kind of look in and go like, well, what's in front of me?
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't do that for a long time until then. You just, I don't know, you have bigger conversations with family members or people close to you and you go, oh, maybe there's something in this, which I was never did before.
Well, I started recording my conversations with my mum over lockdown.
Really?
Yeah, she didn't know I was recording them, but they were just about growing up on the farm and her relationship with horses. And your conversation with your brother was...
In a car.
In a car.
Yeah. And I put a radio mic on him and we drove somewhere and parked up. So we weren't actually looking at each other. It kind of helped. And we were just like staring. But he was talking to me like he wasn't talking to me. Mm-hmm. It was really strange. He was going like, my mum, my dad, rather than our dad. You know, it was really strange. Like, it was a weird separation. But I think it was weirdly because we weren't looking at each other. We were just like staring out the window. And he just like opened up like a tap. It was like, whoa.
And your dad obviously is in the living room. And I don't know about you guys, but my mum absolutely fucking loved being part of the film. I'm guessing your dad absolutely loved it. And I know that Jordan loved it.
Well, yeah, when I first showed, because I say with the client things, I showed it to my brother first. And he was like, oh, the bloody hell have you made that? Because he actually like hated the day of shooting, hated it. It was the hot. It was like when it was 40 degrees.
He loved it. What are you talking about?
It was like July, 40 degrees, and I've got him in his full army gear. Stop. And he was fuming, wasn't he? And there was me, Craig, and him, and the DP, and he was angry. We were all on edge,
weren't we?
Chuck's a big guy.
Yeah.
And the giggle.
But then when I showed him it, he was just like, I can't believe that's what you were doing. That's he couldn't really put two and two together.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, any notes?
But it's interesting how you're kind of always drawn to where you come from, you know, to kind of...
Especially when you're trying to move away from something, like you're saying, like, if you're doing a lot of fashion and or TVCs and music videos and you're kind of like, right, I need to do something else, and you look inward. And then that's when you're like, for me anyway, like a real voice comes out, or for me anyway, like a real display of, this is what kind of how I see this, how I see my voice being.
Yeah.
Which then it's like, then you go off somewhere else.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah. I mean, I never set off to do fashion. I've only ever wanted to do character-driven storytelling through whatever medium that is. That's all I've ever wanted to do. And a couple of years ago, I was on a hamster wheel of doing TVCs where, you know, it was good and I was making good money, but I wasn't really proud of it. And you guys know what that hamster wheel feels like, that it's this great feeling, but it's like you're getting further and further away for why you're a director in the first place. And I hated that feeling so much because I just felt like I was lying to myself. And then briefs were coming in that I wanted to do so desperately, which is like a car advert, you know, that's my dream, a Guinness advert, where it's just storytelling. And I wasn't getting a look in because I had nothing on my reel that, you know, displayed that. And I hated that so much. And that's why I took essentially a year off to make Woodlice. And that's the best decision I've ever made, because that film means the world to me. And I'm only just getting over it now. I'm only back to my own person. Like, I'm only back now.
And for people who don't know, this is your new short film you've just made. It's not out yet. You sent it to us. Probably worth kind of mentioning what the subject matter is, what it's about.
So, Woodlice is a film I vowed to myself I would make. I actually remember saying to myself when I was like 16, when I make this, I'm retiring, but I won't. But I lost my mom when I was 15, and it's about, I don't want to say it's about grief, because that's, I never set off to make another film about grief. It's about a mother and daughter relationship. And it just so happens that she loses her mom. It was a very painful experience. I had an amazing team around me that was checking in on me all the time, but I was just in such a state of, you know, I want to make the best film I can possibly make because I'm telling this story once and that's it. So once I set off to do the production of it, I knew I had to stop pitching. I had to give it absolutely like everything. And my producer said, right, who do you want to shoot it? I said, Robbie Ryan, nobody else. Because the way Robbie Ryan makes reality look so beautiful is exactly the only pair of hands I wanted on this. And we got him. And he, you know, he's lost both of his parents. And I think he really related to the script. But before that, even writing the script, it took me 4 years to write the script. So I took myself on writing retreats. I took myself down the country to try write it. And it just always felt so forced. Because you're talking about grief, you know. That it's just in one snap, it's just yet another grief story. And I did not want this to feel like a 30-something-year-old talking about her mother dying. I wanted to be like a 15-year-old, that 15-year-old talking and exactly how it felt and discussing how so much more comes before sadness and grief. There's, you know, there's so many more emotions, and that's what I feel I haven't ever, well, maybe, yeah. That's what I feel that story isn't told that many times, of what it actually feels like and how it completely defines you as a person, especially from such a young age. So I took myself on so many writing retreats, and it just wasn't happening. It felt too forced. And I had a guy called Greg Fay who helped me so much, a screenwriter. And it was during COVID. It was just when COVID started. And I went to his back garden and he goes, right, what can I help you with? And I was like, I want to make a short film. And he goes, right, so what you need me for? And I was like, I've never made one. I mean, I made Wooden Wheel, but in my head, this was the real deal. You know, this was, I'm giving this everything. So I said, I mean, I don't know what to do. Like, do I start with the beginning, middle and end? Do I have to start with the characters? Someone told me that I should start with the characters instead of the beginning, middle and end. And he was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, do you have a story? And I was like, yeah, that's the only thing I do have. And he's like, right, so sit down and tell me the story. So I got maybe 5 minutes into the story and he's like, don't tell my wife, Leon, but I'm going to the shop to get a packet of John Player Blue. And he smoked for the first time in years because he was, you know, so invested. And it was amazing. He just, the only advice he gave me was, forget about every single question you've asked me. All you need to do is put pen to paper, because the more you think about those questions, the less pure it's going to be. And then I did it. I came home one day. This is probably a year later, after sending him drafts and drafts in the middle of the night. And he'd email me back and say, go to bed. It's not working. Go to bed. This feels too forced. You're thinking about it too much. Go to bed. And then I came home one day. I don't know what it was about that day. And I think I wrote for 7 hours straight. And my laptop was soaking wet with tears. I don't even think I had a glass of water in the 7 hours. And something about that day, the 15-year-old just appeared and she just wrote the script. And I remembered everything like it was yesterday. I remembered her number. I remembered the smell of her wig. I remembered what my curtains felt like. I remembered everything. And it just, I wrote it. Didn't spell check it, exported it, sent it to Greg. I still have the email. The subject says, I think I did it. And he just responded and said, "You did it. Don't dare touch this." And that's the original script.
Well, that must have been a crazy... It's almost like therapy. It must have just been like a personal therapy session. Like, did you feel like you were talking to yourself, really? Like,
it was supposed to be a dialogue script. Like, that's how it was supposed to, but it took place as a diary entry. I just started subconsciously talking to her. I was just writing, like, you know, to my mother as a 15-year-old. And it was the most bizarre feeling. But all I knew was the second I stopped writing, I knew that it was time to stop. I didn't even know what length I was on. I just knew, right, done. And then I just stopped crying. And I just explored it. And I was like, right, that's it. I've done it. Like, it's now, it's time. And then everything that came after that, once I started working with Robbie, the whole experience was a lot. You know, even our lighting references were photos, just old photos of my house. We used my mother's clothing, jewelry, everything. And I wasn't doing that even, I can't even explain it. I didn't want it to be autobiographical. I want it to be, I mean, I'm a big believer that the more niche something is, the more relatable it is. So something, it wasn't me trying to reenact how it was. It was more, I think it made me feel really close to it the more I was making it. How do I say it? I don't even know how to word that. It wasn't like I was trying to recreate my childhood or recreate mini me and my mother. It was, I just treated it like a therapy session.
Because there is a thing in therapy, isn't it, where they do like, it's like the inner child, where if people have had traumatic experiences growing up, they do a thing where it's like you speaking to your inner child, or you put your inner child into like an object or something, and you write diary entries and things. It does help you with trauma. So it's kind of like you almost just like figured it out yourself in a way there.
Yeah, it was just the best 5 days of my life. It was truly like, it was just amazing. The cast were incredible. And I made, you know, I was back home so much as well, like an all Irish crew. Even that alone, it's the first time shooting in Ireland. Other than, you know, Wooden Wheel, but like with the crew, and it was just the best 5 days of my life. It was to see it all take place and to be on set with Robbie, obviously, it was just like mind blowing. And my dad came on set, and that was the most, I mean, that was wild. There was the scene that I was doing in the bedroom, and it was me and Lonnie, the Sive, who was playing Lonnie. And it was one of the quite emotional scenes. And then my AD, Ed Bellamy, he comes over to me and he knocks on the door. And I'm like, what? Because Robbie was outside and my AC was outside. So we treated every scene very minimal people as you know, as possible. And he just said, "Your dad's here." I was like, "All right, is he okay?" And he's like, no, I think you need to come outside." And he was just so upset because he looked at the monitor and he was like, "That looks just like my Lonnie." I don't think anyone on set knew that Lonnie was what I was actually called. He was like, "That's my Lonnie." And it was just the most special 5 days of my life. And when it came to the edit as well, it was all just very intense. It's not till I'm out of it, since I'm out of it now, that I've realised how mad I am for making this. I only feel back to normal now. It was pretty traumatic, to be honest. It was a lot of revisiting.
It's getting me quite upset.
Me too. Me too.
Yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot of revisiting, a lot of emotions that I buried deep inside me for 16 years, essentially. And, you know, my team were incredible around me and almost, you know, are you okay? You okay? I'm like, I'm fine. I'm absolutely fine. Absolutely fine. Every day, be like, I'm all right. And everyone around me had to take breaks and in floods of tears around me. And I was just, I was like, got like militant about it. I was like, I'm not letting anything get to me. And then in October, we put it into the festivals. And it was done and it was delivered and it was on its way to the festivals. And that's when it hit me. I was like, okay, I'm left with so many emotions right now. And that was really, really tough.
Thank you for sending it over.
Yeah, I feel very privileged that I've seen it now. Because it makes it a lot more real when you're talking about it to me and then you're talking out. I'm like getting welled up, thinking about your dad coming in tonight. It's just like...
Yeah, that upset me as well, actually. I'm just thinking back to when I, because I just got sent the link and now I'm just going to have a quick look at the... For some reason, I don't know why, I just wanted to watch the... I just wanted to see what the first frame was, just out of curiosity. And then 10 minutes or whatever it is later, I'd finish your film. I just, you know, it swallowed me up completely. Left me an absolute mess, to be honest with you. And I just sat there for about 30 minutes before I called you.
Yeah, you called me straight away.
Well, I never even thought about this part of it. I'm the biggest empath. Like, my middle name is Sorry. It's all I say is, oh, sorry, oh, sorry. And I've realised I've made a film that makes everyone cry and I need to get used to that because it's killing me. It really is killing me, but no, I can't be in the room with anyone when they're watching it. I can't do it.
Actually, that scene.
Yeah, he had the final say. I didn't let it go anywhere until... And I waited, I went home. I actually moved back home last year afterwards, to be honest. And I waited a Sunday. He's usually home around 6 o'clock, goes to the pub, has a couple of Guinness, and he comes back. And this time around, didn't come home. I'm like, where is he? Comes back at around 10 o'clock, had a couple more beers this time. And I was like, maybe this is perfect. My dad's a bit more, you know, more... open to his emotions, feeling his emotions with a couple of beers in him. I said, right, Dad, do you want to watch the film? And he just goes, do I need a beer? I was like, yeah. And he went to the fridge, got his can out. My dad's not an alcoholic, by the way. He just loves it. And I was like, right, I'm going to go into my bedroom. You just sit here and I'll be in. I'll be into you afterwards. And my God, that was, I heard the credits and I dipped my head out and he was just sitting there with his hands in his head in his hands. And he just sat there for like maybe 15 minutes. And I just stood there like a statue for 15 minutes staring at him. So the second he looked up, I was there. He just didn't come up. And he went, he put his head up and looked over. And yeah, he just was like, he said one thing and he just said, I'm proud of the both of you. And that's all he said. And he gave me a hug. And I was like, do you like it? He said, I'm proud of the both of you. And that was it. And that's when I went into the festivals and it's, premiering at Rain Dance in June for Best Short.
That's amazing.
Wow. I feel like I know your dad for some reason. I feel like after watching your two shots and then seeing them, I don't know, I can really see that.
It must have been hard casting yourself, I always thought when I watched it. Was it hard?
It was really hard. So, you know, I tackled it essentially by, I don't want a, it's called Billy Barry's is this drama school back home in Ireland where all the show kids go. I was obviously in it. I didn't want a show kid to play this character. So I went back to my old school, I gave a little speech at my old school and said, this is what I'm looking for. I was in every Facebook mum's group back home for Irish dancing, for hockey, everything. And our the self-tapes we got through were very sweet. But as you can imagine with that script, it could very easily be taken the wrong way. And then last minute, Sive's self-tape came through and she just read it so calmly. She just didn't put anything on. And I was like, that's her. That has to be her. Because I just wanted someone that had the, you know, I wanted someone that had the similarities and the, what's the word I'm looking for?
I guess someone who you saw yourself in, I guess.
Yeah. And there's something about Sive just had that.
Did you cast her before you cast someone to play your mum?
No, I found her first.
In Ireland as well?
Oh yeah, all in Ireland. And that was just amazing. I was flying home to spend a lot of time with them. I had to really gain Sive specifically. I really wanted to gain her trust. I met her parents and had a chat with their parents to say, I need to be realistic with you guys. This is quite a heavy topic. And I've sent you the script, but there will be some heavy scenes in here. And if you're uncomfortable with it, I want to be completely clear with you. And they were incredible and really proud of her. And we had a lot of script reads. And I was never supposed to do the voiceover. That was supposed to be Sive.
I was going to bring that up, but I didn't know if I wanted to get in. Like,
yeah, it was never supposed to be me. Never. Right. I didn't ever want to narrate my trauma. You know, that's what it was like in my head. It's like, there's no way. There's no way I am reading this. As you guys know from watching it, the script is, you could put that over a black screen and know exactly what you're dealing with. So when it came to the shot list, you know, my assistant Frankie at the time, it was 6 months of, you know, we printed out the shots and sat in my sitting room nearly every night, piecing it all together. How does the waterfall feel over this line? This line is very intense. We need some kind of nature here. How are we going to symbolize, you know, this, you know, pain here? And that's what was really, I mean, it was so amazing to do, but that it was tricky trying to find a happy medium between putting a viewer through pain for no reason and being really understated, because it's all in the words. Mm-hmm. And that's why there's a lot of nature in there. The nature is almost playing a part to just give the viewer a second to breathe and just to focus on the words. So I made an animatic that I used for pretty much 6 months before going into shooting, and that's what I sent to Robbie to show the feeling and what worked over, you know, what worked over certain lines, what felt too much, what needed more. And I was devoted to this animatic. I was like, this is feeding, breathing.
Are these like drawn storyboards, animatics? Or was it like a bit of everything? Photography and...
There's some storyboard drawings, and then there was a lot of like, just like nature random clips, really. And then some of my own footage as well. Yeah. And when I made that, someone at RSA essentially said to me, have you ever... I had a script read. And I read it out to them. And a guy there said, I think you should record yourself. And I went home and I recorded myself. And then I put it over this animatic. And then from that point on, we just used that as a reference. So then when it went into the edit room, Jack Singer, my amazing editor, we were going back and forth. And I just kept saying, I'm going to have to fly home soon and record Sive. And I could just tell he was like, I don't think you need to do that. I was like, no, I'm not doing it. It's not my voice. It's not. And we tried it with Sive's voice, and it just, I was like, okay, it needs to be my voice.
Strangely, it felt like a 15-year-old girl, though.
Well, like, writing, but it's weird because it feels like you're reading an old diary entry, like it does. It fit, yeah. But it's weird because it has this mature voice speaking as a 15-year-old in a weird way. So it really, that's for me, right towards the end, it really punched me.
Yeah.
Because I actually didn't know it was you, really, until, like, towards the end, just from knowing your voice a little bit. And then I was like, hang on a minute. Is this Leon? And then I, like, sat through the credits. I was like, fuck.
Yeah, it was...
Big choice of that.
I think just the whole bloody thing. I just, I just can't believe it. I even did it. And I'm out of it now. And, you know, it's the... just taking a breather now.
Well done. You have to have another year off.
Congratulations. Yeah. Well done.
Yeah, well done. Yeah, because it's really, really special.
It is very special. Yeah.
I guess we were going to say what's next from that, but I guess it's a bit of breathing room. I don't really know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the other main reason I made that short film is going back to, you know, wanting to do storytelling and, you know, that film means so much to me because that is really where I want to go. That's the visual language that I want to continue with. And I'm in a bit of a transitional period now with my work where, you know, I care so much about my work. I'm so particular with, you know, it's like my baby. All my work is my baby and I want to be really precious about it. And it's exciting, but it's scary. I'm freelance for the first time in essentially 10 years. And I'm just seeing it as a bit of an opportunity to really hone in the reason I became a director in the first place. And that is to tell stories. And, you know, I've always been such a visual person and always been completely obsessed with color and composition. And I always felt like, yeah, my work means something, but the depth was never there. And now going forward with the shorts, I feel like the visual, the depth matches the visuals. For the first time, I feel like, there we go. That's who I am as an artist. And I think that's the biggest gift I could have given to my career, was to just stop, make that, and go forward with that vision, really.
It's funny, I kind of saw it in one of your recent ads you did for Hers, which is, it feels still in your tone of voice, but then watching your shorts and then seeing that, you can see it pushing into the commercial world.
Well, that's the first job I did after.
Oh, right. Well, you can really, really feel it. Because it feels, well, it's like mother, the kids, and about them, and it's shot beautifully and feels more of storytelling. Yeah. I don't know. It's funny how you can just see that transition, like, instantly. Yeah.
It's exciting. I think the industry's changed so much the last 2 years, dramatically, that everything's, you know, it's been tough, but I love it. I just love a challenge, and only the strongest are going to survive. And I'm here for it. I'm like, let's go.
Let's go. I love
it. Let's go.
Well, Leon, thank you so much for that. That was amazing.
Yeah, very
sweet. I was so enthralled then by it all.
Thanks,
you know.
Ready for a pint?
Well, I just took the words out of my mouth. Can we go for a pint, please?
Yeah. Right. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Well, thanks for having me. And you guys are also smashing it. I'm really proud of you both, too.
Thank you.
And thanks to all our listeners. Hope you enjoyed it.
Okay.
Ciao. Bye.